Have you ever thought about what it truly means to design your life instead of letting your career define it for you? Hi, I'm Dr. James Bryant, the host of the Engineer Your Success podcast, and today I'm sitting down with Harley Green, a former computer engineer who leveraged his skills to transition into real estate investing, virtual assistant services, all while creating a location-independent lifestyle. Harley shares how he went from writing code in high school to building a thriving real estate portfolio and launching a business that helps others achieve freedom through delegation. If you're looking to create new opportunities, build financial security, or take the next step towards a more fulfilling life, Harley's journey will inspire you.
Success isn't just about what you achieve. It's about living a life that reflects your values and priorities. Welcome to Engineer Your Success, the podcast that helps you lead with intention and live fulfilled.
Today, we are joined by a very special guest, Mr. Harley Green. So, Harley, please tell the podcast audience a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, thanks, James. I'm happy to be here. My background is computer engineering. I spent about 15 years as a computer engineer or software architect working in the defense industry between Southern California and Northern Virginia. Had a great career doing that. And near the end of my career, we started learning about real estate investing and started doing some real estate investing on the side. That grew and got to the point where it was able to replace my engineering income. So we started doing that more full time and having young children. We also started leveraging virtual assistants. Now we help other people have that same kind of success in having side hustles or, you know, starting other businesses while still having a full time job, leveraging incredible people as virtual assistants. We started in 2024 being digital nomads. We have three young kids and we're just traveling the world. We spend about 1 to 3 months in different countries exploring the world.
Wow, that's great. So Harley, let's go back in time and think about your engineering career. What interested you in computer engineering?
So it was from an early age. I'd say in middle school is when I really kind of got into computers. I was at a friend's house who had a PC and they were using MS-DOS and typing commands to load up programs. And I was just like, oh, that's so cool. Like I think my mom had the Macs at home or something, but I didn't really use it. She used it just for work stuff. And so I wasn't really exposed to PCs or gaming at all. And so I got into it. I was like, how do you make these games or how do you make these programs? And so we went and got some books on programming, asked some people I knew that were kind of into computers, like where you should start. And they recommend learning Perl, which is a scripting language. So I taught myself Perl by reading textbooks. And then I was like, hey, I've read like 5 different textbooks. I think I'm ready to start like trying it out. And so convinced my mom to get me a laptop when I was like in 8th grade. And she's like, well, if you're going to have a laptop, it's a big expense. Like they're very expensive back then. And she's like, you got to use it for productive things. Like you can't just play games on it. It's like, fine. So I talked to this other guy who had a PC building and software business. And I was like, hey, I know Perl really well. I'm willing to learn other languages. Can I work for you? And he's like, sure. So a minimum wage programmer working for him. And it was great though, just catapulted. So I've never had a traditional high school kid job or something. All through high school, I was building backend websites using PHP, Perl, and MySQL databases.
So your entrepreneurial journey started way back in the 8th grade and was fostered by the fact that your mom says, hey, if you're going to have this laptop, if we're going to make this expense, you're going to need to put some productive use to it.
Absolutely. I still had fun, but it was, you know, had the time card tracker and projects from my boss and learned what it's like to be an independent contractor and have to balance time and projects and still report to somebody. And I loved it. And through all high school, I was just single focused. I was like, hey, I know I want to be doing computers, whether it's like programming or building in the hardware. And so it helped a lot with picking out classes that I was going to take. I actually kind of pushed the school that I was in for high school to start a programming course.
What came next for you? What was the next stage in your evolution as a programmer, as an entrepreneur? What was the next phase in your career?
Looking back, we've always been doing little side hustles as entrepreneurs in addition to, you know, having full-time jobs. So I graduated high school. I got accepted to University of Southern California, where at the time they had a unique program that was a combination of computer science and computer engineering. I kind of felt somewhat probably cocky at the time of like, hey, I've already kind of mastered programming. I've been doing it for so many years. I knew C++, Python, Perl, PHP, MySQL all by the time I was a senior in high school. And so I was like, I want to really challenge myself, learn something new. And I had exposure to the electrical engineering side of things. That kind of double major combined into one program that USC had really appealed to me. I got down there, and my freshman year, a few weeks after school started, I was at a barbecue with some family members that lived in Redondo Beach. And there was a friend of the family there who was an executive at a local defense contractor, the Aerospace Corporation. Well, we've got a really great intern program. You should apply for it. And he's like, you know, shoot, send me an email when you get back to school with your resume. And I got an internship there and worked there every summer during my career at university. I did some part-time jobs working in the computer science department and other departments at the university doing programming. And I got a full-time job out of college at the Aerospace Corporation. And it was amazing because they developed my skills, exposing me to a wide variety of technologies, from running massive networking test beds to embedded systems and AI. They helped with like tuition reimbursement. So I was able to focus immediately on getting my master's degree. And I got a master's in computer science with a focus on computer security.
You've gotten the beginning entrepreneurial background, you have the educational background, and then so you're working in this industry, and then that eventually evolved into you doing real estate. So let's talk a little bit about that transition in terms of you were working, things were going well, but you decided that it was time to start thinking about doing something different.
At Engineer Your Success, we're here for leaders like you. Leaders who know there's more to life than just checking off accomplishments. Imagine feeling confident in your decisions, clear in your direction, and fulfilled in both your career and personal life. Whether you're looking to build executive presence, master the art of dynamic balance, or lead with a greater purpose, we are here to help you make it happen. You don't have to choose between success at work and fulfillment at home. You can thrive in both. Visit www.engineeryoursuccessnow.com to learn more about how we help leaders like you turn aspirations into action and success into something truly meaningful. Engineer your success, because thriving isn't just for others, it's for you.
Yeah, well, as engineers, we have kind of above average salaries and generally pretty good benefits. But by the time we started looking at real estate, we were in Northern Virginia at the time. I had left the Aerospace Corporation and started working for a boutique defense contractor. I think I was employee number 15. It was a small business, very agile, tons of sharp guys to work with. It was a really great experience. And they had amazing benefits. One of those benefits was a profit sharing program where they took 20% of our salary, no matching, just like 20% of what you earned, throw it in the 401k. That was a massive savings boost. We didn't have to take any money from the paycheck to put into savings. We were able to take all the money and have a really tight budget. We still budgeted heavily because we had a lot of financial goals. We were used to having a tight budget from paying off student loans. USC is not cheap. We had a long time of paying off student loans and having to budget. After we got them paid off, we stuck to that same kind of lifestyle. Like, hey, we're not going to grow our lifestyle. We're instead take that money we were paying on student loans and start saving it. We were very diligent savers. We lived off of one income, even though my wife was also working as a teacher. Her income was all just going to savings, and got to the point where had a substantial amount just kind of sitting in like a brokerage account in index funds. That's kind of all we knew. We were not like picking stocks or doing any complex things. It's just like we had learned kind of from our parents, like just put an S&P 500, you'll do okay in the long run, right? We'll eventually retire by the time we're 65 and do well. Well, we were doing very well. We had great timing just with like the time we graduated from school, like definitely timing in the market helped us a lot. We didn't really start saving until after 2008 crash. So like we were not impacted by that at all. We were just poor college students when that all went down, or recent graduates. And so we didn't have that big setback that a lot of people had that were working. And we just had that time of a lot of growth without having to do anything complex. We were looking at our overall savings situation. If something like 2008 was to happen again or markets crashed, we'd really be hurting because like all of our money was in like index funds between the 401k and you know our personal brokerage. Even though we were in different funds, they're all still highly correlated, right? If there's going to be a market crash, it would really set us back a long way. So we're like, how can we diversify without getting too risky? We're not necessarily going all in on crypto or things like that, although at the time we should have. But yeah, so we're like, what are some things we could do? Some of our coworkers had been pretty successful in real estate. Not doing anything fancy. They would just like when they moved for whatever reasons, they were moving, you know, getting a bigger house because they had more kids. They just held on to their past residences and kept them as rentals. And they've been doing really well with that. And so we're driving back from a company retreat one day. We were going by an IKEA and we had a pickup truck. And so we're like, well, you know, we're in this house, and we've got this basement that we never go into because we had moved to a house that was larger, anticipating having kids, right? But we didn't have kids yet. So like, we never go down there. We have plenty of space. What if we just rented it out? It had kind of rough-ins for a kitchen area. So we pulled off the highway, went into IKEA, loaded the truck up with cabinets and stuff for building out that kitchen, got an electrician and plumber to come out to get the wiring and plumbing set up so we could get the sink and oven put in there, and started renting out our basement. But that was nice because it was kind of a low lift to get exposed to real estate investing. A lot of people don't know this, but when you are renting out personal space in your primary residence, you don't necessarily have to follow as stringent of application requirements or things. Like, you can be pretty selective. You can say, hey, I want someone from my church. I'm only comfortable with a female. Like, you can have those requirements so that it's super comfortable because they're sharing space with you. We had a young couple from our church that was able to rent it out from us. I got our feet wet with doing leases and tenant issues and stuff like that. And then it rolled from there. We were like, well, that's working pretty well. Maybe we get something else. We happened to have amazing timing with markets. We were living in Northern Virginia and there were still a lot of short sales happening. People still kind of having those effects from the 2000s. Ended up buying our first standalone investment property, a condo. It was pretty much rent ready. Just needed a coat of paint that we did ourselves. You know, we put that sweat equity in. And it was funny. It was a short sale. We put an offer in. It was like months later, we got a call from our realtor. He's like, hey, the bank's like accepting your offer. Can you sign the paperwork? We happened to be on vacation in Hawaii at the time, trying to find a UPS store or someplace with a notary so we could like, you know, print it out and get it signed. So our first standalone rental property, we finished all of that while we were on vacation in Hawaii.
That is an awesome story and speaks to that transition period. You're saving, you guys are doing all the right things, but then you're looking at saying, is there something that we can do in addition to what we've been doing? And that led you down the road of real estate. You talked about that first standalone property that you guys invested in. Let's talk a little bit more about your real estate investing journey.
Sure. We were really good at building net worth with real estate for a while. So we were just doing that same basic model, like find a rent-ready property, put 25% down. We weren't trying to do fancy complex things. We had a lot of money in the brokerage account. And so we were basically converting from the investments in the index funds to real estate, getting more leverage using loans. And so we were also benefiting from massive appreciation, like rents increasing in Northern Virginia. That's one of the beauties about real estate. We kind of discovered what, let's say you put 25% down in buying a property, but the appreciation is like, let's throw a high number out, you know, just like for easy of computation. Let's say it's going up in value 10% a year. Well, that 10% growth is on the full value of that property. So let's say we bought a $100,000 condo. We put, let's just say $10,000 down 10%, which you can do for primary residence mortgages easily. If it goes up 10%, 10% of the 100K is 100% of our investment. Where else can you get that kind of return? Now, that's not necessarily money that you can use to live on. I can talk about that in just a second. You can't eat a brick, right? Your house is there. It's got a lot of equity. That's great. On paper, you look like you're doing really well. But you can't use that money to buy groceries or take your next vacation. So that was something we started transitioning. I would say 2019 was when we got our first short-term rental. We were vacationing in Myrtle Beach. We were really hot on real estate. My wife had just gotten her real estate license. So of course, like in our free time, it's like a rainy day. We were like, hey, let's go on Zillow and see what properties around here are like. And we saw one that was for sale. It was a 2-bedroom, 2-bath condo, perfect for our family at the time. We had 2 young children. We went on Airbnb, kind of looked up homes that were similar, and we're like, hey, like, this looks like the numbers could be pretty good. So we called up a realtor and toured it. We had just missed out on a competitive offer back in Northern Virginia. So I had that pre-approval letter from the bank for a purchase kind of burning a hole in my pocket. I was like, you know, we can use this for a beach house. And we just kind of threw ourselves into it. We didn't do a lot of research on what it is involved in doing a short-term rental. We just were like, well, we'll figure it out. And we kind of learned the tough way, like, short-term rentals are not passive real estate investing. It's a job that's very active. You're now in hospitality. It's a kind of a whole new ballpark. It still has a lot of the advantages of real estate with the leveraged returns and all the tax benefits and stuff like that, but definitely a lot more active. And, you know, we got good at that. We got a couple more beach houses in that area because they were doing well. We had good systems. We had great people in place eventually. And one of the things that we did is we started leveling up those original condos that we had purchased back in Northern Virginia. We would do 1031 exchanges because it got to the point where they'd appreciated so much. We had all that equity in there, but the rents were not growing as quickly. People's incomes were not growing at the same rate that real estate values were going up. And so what we could do is take advantage of a tax deferred exchange where we sold the properties, but we'd have to pay any taxes on our gains yet because we immediately rolled all that money into a new larger property. We converted two smaller condos into one larger beach house. So we didn't have to put as much money out of pocket. And that then converted that high equity into higher cash flow for us because the short-term rentals produced more cash flow. And that's eventually kind of what led to that freedom of saying, hey, I don't need to do that computer engineering job anymore because I got the cash flow coming from these slightly more active real estate investments.
So you went from a strategy of building wealth through appreciation of that asset. You had some cash flow, but the real play was building wealth. And then you transitioned and was able to do the 1031 exchange so that you could buy larger properties that could give you more cash flow.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It got to the point where the net worth was good, but our passive cash flow wasn't until we started getting into those short-term rentals. We've still been kind of following that similar model where every quarter we're going to go and look at our portfolio of real estate. We're going to look at what the cash flow is, and we track that from what is the rent paying for the mortgage and maintenance and taxes and insurance, all that stuff, and then what's left over for like kind of a total combination of cash flow plus net worth building that we care about. And if one of those houses starts kind of dropping down below like our portfolio average, then we can say, hey, maybe it's time we convert that. So either we sell it and we, you know, convert it to another short-term rental, or another area that we've started doing recently that's not as tax advantage, but it's very passive for us and has good returns, is doing private money lending. So I help other young real estate investors getting started, like flipping houses. I give them the funds they wouldn't be able to get very easily from traditional banks because I have a personal relationship with them. I know the market. I can say, hey, let's partner together. I'm going to give you the funding you need to buy and renovate this property. And in exchange, I get a higher than average interest rate and return on that. But I don't have the risk of like in time investment of having to go manage contractors and that's like sweat equity.
One of the questions that comes to mind is, have you noticed that the preparation and training you have had as an engineer, have you found that useful in what you're doing now?
Absolutely. So being able to research things to solve problems and analyze numbers has been huge with investing, as well as just operating businesses. And so kind of our fundamental things that we value and use to be successful, we talk about a lot, is leverage. And so we find leverage with people. You know, we're going to use virtual assistants to scale our time. We use leverage with finances. I'm going to use the bank money to bring 75% or more, hopefully, when I buy real estate to get leverage returns. I'm going to use technology, whether that's software on the computer, or AI, spreadsheets, things like that, to help analyze deals, to help us with tracking things. We're not just tracking our accounting on a spreadsheet. We're using software accounting tools to make it faster and easier and get automatic reports so we can see exactly how things are performing. And then procedures and systems and processes, that's another big thing. So like if I'm going to do something, it has to be repeated, right? I'm going to make it into a procedure. And the way I do that is by recording myself doing it. If it's on the computer, like, hey, here's how we set up the automatic pricing for the beach houses, right? I'm going to show how we do that once. And we kind of tweak it on a quarterly basis. So I'm just talking through it, recording myself. And I take that video file, put it in our task portal built on monday.com. I assign one of my virtual assistants and say, hey, watch the video. Put it through ChatGPT to create a summary and basic procedure and make a written procedure with like table of contents, step by step on how to do this. So now I never have to do it again because it's a documented process and I can have someone who's a virtual assistant do it for me, whose time is worth less than mine, and I never have to worry about it again.
You're talking about your journey from a computer engineer and then you're doing real estate, but there's only 24 hours in a day and there's only you. And you mentioned leverage and virtual assistants a few times throughout this interview. Let's talk about your journey in first learning to work with virtual assistants yourself and then the company that you've created off of that.
When we first got started with real estate, as I mentioned before, I was working full-time as a computer engineer and I had a great job, great pay. One of the cool things they did that helped accelerate our financial freedom was they would pay my salary, my effective hourly salary, as long as I had contract work. If I was willing to work 50, 60 hours a week and they had the contracts, I could do it. One of the ways they hedged and protected themselves as a small company was they would get more work than they had engineers to perform, with the idea that a lot of the engineers are going to do the overtime. And so that way, if the market went down or defense budgets got cut, they have to fire people. Just like, oh, you're just going back to working 40 hours a week instead of like the 60, 70 that you've been doing. And that was great for, especially for being young, having not having kids yet, or just like very young kids. I was just putting in massive hours at work and saving more of that money to invest in real estate. However, is it worth my time to do the QuickBooks accounting or like going and painting a condo and doing that kind of work when I can go to my engineering job and make a really good salary plus the benefits? No, but these things still had to happen. So that's when the leveraging people came in. That was one of our big pain points, especially with my wife doing her real estate business. Same thing applied to her. Her value is when meeting the clients, showing them the homes, helping negotiate those offers. It was not all the back end stuff of like assembling documents, doing newsletter marketing. Even though those are things that have to happen in business, that's not where the high value is created. We want to focus on doing high value activities. So we discovered virtual assistants. There's incredibly talented people that live in the Philippines. They just have a very low cost of living there. So you're able to get this arbitrage of cost of living differences where we're giving them life-changing, amazing salaries for where they live, but it's still far less than what our time is worth or our alternate activities with US-based businesses. That arbitrage difference is incredibly powerful. So you're able to get really talented people that have college degrees, excellent written and spoken English, and they can do things for us like our bookkeeping, our marketing, client care, document assembly, administrative tasks. And so we kind of figured that out again, just like the short-term rentals. At first, we're like, we probably need a part-time bookkeeper. We're not spending 40 hours a week doing our bookkeeping between the businesses. But we kind of learned the hard way. If you hire someone part-time, they might agree to that at first, but most people want full-time work. They want to have the full-time salary and benefits so they can maximize their value and help their family the most. And so you spend 3 months getting someone trained up on part-time, and then all of a sudden, like, oh, well, I got a full-time job. See ya. Well, that's very painful. And if you don't have written procedures, which we were still learning, kind of developing at a time, you're basically like, wow, I just wasted 3 months because I did spend a lot of time on Zoom training them and I didn't have them write procedures. And now I got to do this all over again with someone new. So we've taken all the lessons learned, how to leverage technology fully to manage and task and keep communication very clear, and just package that with this business we have now, which is Workergenic. So we know all the things to ask for doing the talent search. Do you have backup power? Do you have a backup cell phone service? What part of the country do you live in? How likely is it to have typhoons and things like that? That kind of internal tribal knowledge that's really unique for this overseas operation, we've already mastered it. And so we provide all that. We provide technology, cloud storage, all the things that we leverage, this exact same system we use currently. We just share it with all of our clients so they can skip all the headaches and learning curve that we had to go through as we were getting started.
You learn how to leverage your time, you're leveraging your resources, leveraging finances, all to create the life that you want.
It's one of the things that we were really focused on last year was trying to design our businesses to support the life that we want instead of having our life be a result of our professional careers. And we had to kind of flip when we were getting started. It was like, all right, well, I want to have a high salary, so I'm going to be a computer engineer. Here's the salary I get. All right, this is the lifestyle I can have because of this. You can apply this also as you are in the career. How are you going to do professional development to achieve the lifestyle you want? So if you want to have a lifestyle where you travel more, but you still want to be an engineer, that is doable. You just maybe need to think about changing industry, maybe find an industry that still needs engineering that supports remote work, or get some additional qualifications or education. That's what we did eventually. It was like, let's get that master's degree. That's going to open up doors. Let's get additional certifications in computer security or things like that. That's going to open up doors. We applied that early on when we were in California to get out of California and move to Virginia, where there was a lower cost of living, more job opportunities. By getting my master's degree, really pushing to get different kinds of security clearances at my current job, it opened the door for them to say, we've got other jobs in Northern Virginia, and you'd be a great fit for that now.
I love the whole concept of designing for the life that you want, not just the career that you want. On this podcast, we talk a lot about achieving success, both in business and in life. Part of how you do that is designing what it is that you want. Even if you're listening to this podcast and you have your career mapped out, take some time to do the same thing for your life and then spend time integrating those things, because that's going to give you what you're looking for. What advice would you have for other engineers that are interested in creating something different or taking the next step?
So I think it just goes back to what you said. You know, think about what you want your life to be like, and then think about what has to be true to have that kind of life. And a lot of times, especially as engineers, and I find myself still doing this, like, we're very problem oriented and kind of get like tunnel vision, right? You're like, all right, here's the problem. Here's what I've been trained. I'm going to try to apply the hammer to every single kind of problem. Try to take a step back and do some open ocean, blue ocean thinking of what can be possible, what needs to be true, regardless of my past or limiting beliefs. And it can be really helpful just to throw out ideas, brainstorm. Don't shoot things down at the moment. Just say, here it is. Here's what could be possible. And then work backwards from there. You'd be really surprised at how you could make things work, even with working full time. The second thing that I want to share is goal setting. So once you have that, done the brainstorming, you have the ideas in mind, having very clear written goals is incredibly helpful. There's just something about mental, spiritual, and universe type things that can all flow together. Even when I was working as a computer engineer, before we got that first beach house, one of the things that my wife had been talking about was like, we want to get a beach house. I wanted a new truck. And we wrote it down. We had a chalkboard in our kitchen and we wrote down, by the end of this year, we're going to have a beach house and Harley's going to get the new truck that he wants. And it happened in like 3 months. It was so fast and those things fell together seemingly randomly, but it's because we were writing it down, seeing it every single day when we ate breakfast and thinking about it. That when opportunities present themselves, you're subconsciously working towards these things. You'll be amazed how quickly it can happen.
So make sure that if you have a goal and you haven't articulated it, take some time to articulate it. Write it down, because there is power in writing it down. There's power in sharing those goals with others as well. So Harley, this has been a fantastic interview. For those folks that want to follow up with you, that want to connect with you, what's the best way for people to reach out?
Yeah, so you go to my website, workergenics.com/Harley. I've got a Calendly link on there. Love networking with other professionals and people looking to level up their lives. Happy to share my experience and hopefully help people along their way as well.
Okay. We'll make sure that we include a link to contact Harley in the show notes of the episode. And so Harley, I'm going to end this podcast episode like I end every podcast episode. And that's this: many people know what to do. Fewer people know how to do it. And there's a select group of people that actually follow through, do it, and are living the life of their dreams. Harley, I want to thank you for being part of that select few and helping others do the same.
It's absolutely my pleasure. Thanks for having me on the show, James.